Market Music with Fairbairn and Russell.
Welcome to the Market Musings podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. It's been quite a busy week for both of us and a number of podcast recordings, amongst other things. But the markets were a nice sight this week. They certainly look better than they have done for the last few weeks, which is nice to see. Now, today we'd like to welcome another guest on the podcast, and he's from a sector we haven't touched on before, and that is the esports sector. So I'd like to extend a big warm welcome from all the way from Vancouver to Derek Liu, the chairman of Blue Star Capital. Welcome, Derek. Hello.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Kenny.
Hi, Derek.
And how are you? How are you, Derek?
Doing very well, thank you. You guys?
Yeah, doing okay. Working from home, like I think the rest of the world tends to be these days. Is it the same for you over in Vancouver?
Yeah, it's the same over here. We're not quite as strict on our lockdown, but certainly okay. The streets are empty and everyone's at home.
Yeah, surreal times, isn't it, when you look outside?
Yeah.
Very strange. And how's the business going? Are you managing to carry on sort of fairly normally, or has it been affected badly in any way?
Well, I mean, I think we're going to get into it a little bit in today's conversation, but I mean, the esports and e-gaming generally is benefiting would be a crass word to use, but it's not okay. Negatively impacted.
Okay, that's good to hear. It's good to hear.
Okay. Derek, obviously, this morning Blue Star released some news, and there was a small placing from a sort of cornerstone investor. Can you explain a bit more about the RNS and the significance? Because there's quite a lot of information in the RNS, and I don't think it's been quite absorbed by the market.
Well, Kenny, thanks for asking, because I mean, we're pretty excited about the events behind that RNS. And in a nutshell, it was a new investment made by Blue Star into a company that is in the process of being listed on the TSX Venture Exchange. The TSX Venture Exchange is here in Vancouver in Canada. And this game is in the mobile gaming space. And it has niche products that are in counterculture. So its flagship title right now is a game called Bud Farm Idol Tycoon. That's available in the Apple App Store and in the Android Store currently. And it's doing record numbers in in-app purchases and advertising over the last 3 or 4 weeks. I think, as we were saying earlier, given partly because people are at home these days.
Interesting. Yeah, we'll have a look at that later. Can you say that name again, Derek? Sorry, the name of the game?
Yeah, the name of the game is Bud Farm Idol Tycoon. The name of the company is Leaf Digital.
Right, okay, perfect. And the investment by this guy, Jonathan Bixby, can you give me a bit of background on him and the significance?
Yeah, Jonathan, great guy. He's a serial entrepreneur. We've worked together for a while now, and he's been a big supporter of Blue since I got involved as well. He's a good guy to have on board.
Excellent. Good stuff. All right, before we talk about Blue and the esports revolution and obviously the investments that Blue have made in this sector, can we dig into your past? I know you said before we went live that you don't really have a social media existence, so it was quite hard to research and find out a bit about you. So it'd be great to know what you've done in business before. And you know, you can go as far back as you want. You know, you can go back to school days, uni days, if you went to uni. it's up to you. The platform's yours.
Yeah, so mission accomplished. I like to be like I was saying before we came on air, one of the benefits of not having a large social presence is really being able to go into meetings without people having had a chance to sort of try to figure out how to game how our conversation is going to go. So it's an unintended benefit of not being that active on social media. Having said that, happy to talk about sort of what we've been doing in the tech space. And it has been really primarily focused in the technology sector. I would say I've been, for the last 10 or 15 years, primarily in the technology sector. So for the last 5 years, I've been CEO of a venture capital firm here in British Columbia, GrowthWorks Capital. GrowthWorks has deployed probably about $600 or $700 million Canadian into the BC technology ecosystem. as far back as 1991. And so it's been a real driver of creating jobs and building the technology ecosystem here in British Columbia to the extent that it has been built. Prior to being at GrowthWorks, an active angel investor with my partners, we had or have still an active angel fund, have invested in probably 50 or 60 companies along the way in that fund. And sort of contemporaneously with that, in my sort of civic duty role, I chaired a Crown corporation called the BC Innovation Council. And that was the province of British Columbia's pointy edge of the wedge to try to spearhead technology, innovation, and really the innovation economy in British Columbia. And I chaired the BC Innovation Council for 5 years, I think it was, up until 2018. Prior to that, and still doing this again contemporaneously, partner in a private equity real estate firm that's based in Toronto, Canada. We're in hospitality, hotel, and multi-unit residential. And before that, I'm embarrassed to admit I was a lawyer for about 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Excellent. So it sounds like you've got. I'm trying to think of the saying over in Scotland. It's you've got a finger in many pies, so to speak.
I would say that's true. I mean, the folks that do a great job working with me at the end of our day say I had no idea we did X.
So how did you end up then in like Blue Star, become the chairman, and obviously the esports guru for Blue Star? How did that all come about?
Well, I mean, we saw a real opportunity to sort of get involved in the esports market. Esports really being at the bleeding edge of where that sort of sector is going and how it's being used by consumers, and how folks are both on the consumer side and on the vendor side are engaging with esports and esports platforms. So really began looking for an opportunity to really get our fingers in the esports pie, Kenny, probably about 8 months ago, and came across Blue Star and its opportunity, and together with that, the six portfolio companies that it invested in at the time that I joined it, and that really seemed like a great portfolio approach to get our fingers into the esports pie.
Yeah, and they're spread across quite a few continents as well.
Absolutely. So, I mean, the beautiful thing about the portfolio approach from an investor's perspective is you are taking away the binary outcome of success or fail. Overall across your portfolio, obviously any single company could succeed or fail, but as a diversified investor, the likelihood of just failing is much less. And so not only is it diversified across across segments of within esports, but also across geography. So an investment in Canada, an investment in the UK, an investment in India, an investment in Australia and in Indonesia, for that geographic spread.
Yeah, and obviously today's announcement as well, that takes the investments up to, I think it's seven. Is it seven investments?
This would be the seventh esports investment of Blue Star, correct?
Yeah. You'll have to enlighten me, Derek, on esports. What exactly is it?
Well, I mean, you know what, Mark, that's a great question, right? Because, I mean, I think when people think of esports, they think typically of the large stadium competitions, so right, they think of esports the same way they think of Premiership, the same way they think of the NFL, the same way they think of professional cricket, which is not incorrect. I mean, there definitely is that portion of the esports pyramid, and there's great opportunity there. And some of our investee companies are participating in that space where they are participating as professional teams competing with all of the monetization opportunities that you do see at the Premiership League, the television rights, the advertising, the merchandising, the fans, right? All of that is happening there at what I'll call the championship level of the esports pyramid. But if you cycle down the pyramid to the fatter part of the pyramid per se, there's this whole group of folks that, let's call them path to pro, right? The same way that you and I may have played football as a kid thinking we were going to be the next Pele, right? Or I might have played ice hockey thinking I was going to be the next Wayne Gretzky. Mm-hmm. There's kids that are playing esports thinking they're going to be the next esport champion of League of Legends. And fueling and providing the infrastructure for all the people to do that, there's huge opportunity. It's not just selling the basketballs and the footballs and the nets, right? I mean, unlike football, where you and I couldn't own the corner pitch, there is an opportunity to own the platform that the future stars of tomorrow are participating on as kids today.
I see. So it's gaming, is it? Gaming tournaments kind of thing.
You know what it is? It is gaming, but I think gaming is it's. I think that the person that coined the phrase esports was either an intentional or an unintentional genius, because the same monetization opportunities that we see in sports from the champions, right, and all of that, all the TV rights, and all of that happening, we also see at the recreational level, right? So again, from a sports level, it's the competition, right? It's the, I mean, that's why we see, for example, we see the F1 esports series taking off right now, because every lockdown mother and father thinks they're a better driver than Lewis Hamilton, and they're jumping onto this platform to go ahead and do that.
Right. Okay. I see. And you're saying that the event actually is a real event in some cases, with real crowds and real fans.
Absolutely. At the Championship League, for example, the League of Legends in 2019 had a viewership of 100 million fans.
Wow.
That's almost as much as Super Bowl, which was last year, I think, just over 100 million.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And the fans are online and also physically at the tournament?
Online, physically.
Yeah. Okay.
In the stadium. It has the potential to be a stadium event. The beautiful thing, though, is if you think about it in today's environment, and I don't know what's happening with professional sports in the UK, but over here, our professional sports commissioners are talking about maybe resuming play without fans.
Right,
What that will also require, though, is the teams being sequestered, because they want the teams not interacting with society at large if they're going to be in physical contact with one another. So think about that experience from a traditional sports experience, and that's a big adjustment. That adjustment, though, from an esports environment, wouldn't be as huge an adjustment, because it's already set on a console or on a mobile handset, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, I get that. I understand that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, just following on from that, Derek, I've actually noticed quite a lot of sort of gambling companies getting into the esports market as well, because obviously their revenue at the moment is suffering because there's no live sports, and obviously people are wanting stuff to bet on as well. So I mean, not only from advertising and merchandise and TV deals, I see there's a gambling angle in this as well. There's an opportunity for some of the bigger companies to get involved.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not a gambling expert, but I think anything that has a random outcome or a unknown outcome is an opportunity for the bookmakers, I think, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Okay. So with your sort of blue star head on again, can you sort of give an overview of the company? I know the company's obviously heavily focused in esports, but there's obviously other investments in sort of payments and technology. Could you just give us a quick run through of the investments?
Yeah, happy to. So when I joined Blue Star, there were two legacy investments, Satoshi Pay and Solr. Satoshi Pay is a micropayments solution using the blockchain. Has recently had a big support from the Stella Foundation, and is working as a partner of the Stella Foundation to sort of implement this micropay solution. And Stoller is a fingerprint vein biometrics solution. So interestingly, if you think about it, every time you use your fingerprint reader to try to unlock your computer or your iPhone, if your finger is wet, it doesn't work, right? Mm-hmm. So what the vein reader does is allows you to use a wet finger. So if you're at a concert or you're out and about and you need to identify with biometrics, the finger vein is pretty much indestructible in terms of what your finger can look like for it to work.
All right, interesting. I actually thought it was a fingerprint, but I stand corrected.
Yeah, it's vein technology, and I'm told that the vein pattern and vein structure is even more unique, if that's possible, than a fingerprint.
It uses your veins. It's not. I thought it was just a name.
It reads the veins in your finger, and the vein and the vein pattern, vein structure and the vein pattern.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's incredible.
And that part of the business, Derek, is it's not Egypt based, but I think quite, or potentially there's quite a large contract in Egypt associated with that.
Yeah, with Egypt Post, I think it was, on a pilot, I guess, I think we see great promise in that pilot that's sort of running with Egypt Post right now.
Excellent, good stuff. And on to the obviously the seven investments. I don't want you to go through all seven because it would probably take too long. But if you were to narrow it down to say sort of top four, not in order of what you think is going to turn out the best investment, but the ones that are most advanced or the ones that are ahead of the game or first mover advantage, whatever, how you want to phrase it.
Maybe I can do it this way rather than going, I think they probably all have first mover advantage. And maybe the way I can do it is if I can sort of divide them into different categories.
Yeah, that makes sense.
A little bit earlier, right? Mm-hmm. So for example, we have of those six, two of the companies are participating in the professional champion league type opportunity where the business case will be, putting a team, I was going to say fielding a team, but putting a team together that it will compete in a organized league. It will compete for prize money, but more importantly than that, it will have an identity. It will have a fan base. It will have brand. And so the same way that the Premiership and the NFL, their teams have brand and fan bases, and they have television contracts. Those are the opportunities that these companies will be participating in. So TV revenue, streaming revenue, stadium revenue, merchandise revenue. So all of those things that make Premiership and the NFL multi-billion dollar leagues are the space that these two companies are participating in. We have two other companies that are participating in this path to pro platform space where they are selling products to recreational players, whether they're recreational players at the association level. So for example, a community center may say, in addition to the ping pong night that we have, we're going to have an esports tournament. Well, they can't put that on themselves. They need a platform to do that on. Mm-hmm. And so, so these companies are providing that platform to the community centers, to the legions, to universities. I mean, the universities and high schools have large intramural programs or even intramural within the universities or leagues, citywide leagues or countrywide leagues. And again, the platforms to put those on with. And so with providing the platform comes all of the marketing opportunities by having engaged with those players, right? So the same way you can sell rink ads at an ice hockey rink, there'll be ad space available on these platforms that will belong to the owner of the platform and served up to the folks that are licensing it. And then we have another layer of companies that have identified an interesting opportunity in the intersection of traditional sport and esports. And an example of that we're not involved in, but an example that we talked about earlier on this podcast is the F1 esports thing where they've, an esports league that's run by F1 and they're using that to engage with their fans. So we've got a couple of companies that are doing that in different sports as well. And then I guess the latest investment that was announced today is this company, Leaf Digital, which is in the mobile handset gaming business and in revenue and with a new game about to be launched on Monday, April 20th.
All right. So you've really covered all the bases, all the different kind of, possible revenue streams that esports could possibly create down the line. So, it's really interesting. And I must admit, obviously, you're not in social media, but I'm in Facebook, and every third or fourth feed that I'm getting in Facebook at the moment is esports, and there's something that just draws you in. You've got to watch one lap. Most of it's F1 stuff, but you watch it, and some of these guys, when they're actually racing, even though it's, they're not physically in the cars, they're absolutely knackered, and they're sweating. they seem to be right in the zone when they're racing. I mean, how real is it compared to, from an F1 point of view? Is the noise and the heat, can they can they recreate the exact same conditions? Or is it?
Yeah, so I mean, that's interesting, right? I mean, huge F1 fan here as well. And I see the physical strain it takes on these drivers, and I whatever the stat is, however many pounds of body weight they lose over the course of a race. I don't think that type of physical trauma is recreated in the esports environment, but certainly the competitive juices are flowing. You are jacked up and sweating, and you know, all of that is happening. But there's no attempt to recreate the physical environment of the traditional sport.
All right. Okay. I wasn't sure because obviously I'm still a novice at this, but it's just amazing how it's came from, you know, I'm not saying nowhere. It's probably been, let's say it's been like an underground sport almost for a couple of years. And then all of a sudden in the last 6 months, it's just went mainstream and beyond. I mean, from my point of view, it could potentially be the biggest spectator sport in the world, or sector in the world.
Well, I think it certainly could be, and I think what we're seeing is we're seeing the inflection, right, of younger generations driving the viewership of the professional leagues, and then the professional leagues growing, and then through that growth, they're getting the attraction of people that have never heard of it before. And I mean, let's think about that for a second. You know, why are younger generations drawn to watching gamers play esports? Well, I mean, I think it's no different than you or I. We grew up playing football and playing ice hockey and playing basketball, and we want to watch. We know how hard it is, and so we want to watch the best of the best compete doing something that we know how difficult it is. And I think that's what we're seeing. Younger generations that have spent their youth, yeah, sure, they're outside playing those same traditional sports, but they're also playing electronic games, and so now they're tuning in to watch the best of the best do what they know is difficult. And as more and more tune in to watch that, the fan base grows, and folks that don't even understand esports go, well, what is this? Why is it so big? Maybe I should check it out. And that's what I think we've seen happening, or started to happen, to your point, Kenny, 6 months ago.
Yeah, definitely. An explosion in the last 6 months. So just obviously we've been talking maybe 20 minutes or so. I know it's hard in this particular sort of environment with COVID, obviously. What's the sort of roadmap ahead for Blue Star for sort of 2020 and beyond, if possible? Can you outline it to investors?
Yeah, the good thing about Blue Star's investment thesis in the esports space really is that it's not negatively affected by the current situation beyond sort of the way business generally is impacted. But the product that we've chosen to invest in and the investment thesis that we have in that product hasn't been negatively influenced by what's happening right now with the coronavirus and COVID. The business plan over the next 12 to 24 months is to continue to work with our investee companies, to continue to help them identify opportunities to the extent that we can, to bring our venture capital experience and expertise to these companies and help them achieve their business objectives. And to participate in follow-on rounds with the investee companies to maintain our pro rata share, Blue Star's pro rata share in these companies as they journey along the pathway to profitability and to success.
Yeah, and you've got some quite reasonable stakes in these companies as well. I think some of them range from about 9-10% up to nearly sort of 20% in some of these.
Yeah, I would say probably. I don't have the cap tables in front of me, but I would have said between 12-18% is kind of where we sit.
Yeah, which is
in all except for this new one that we've invested in just today. That one is at a much smaller stake because it's in revenue and about to be listed. So I mean, the interesting thing about this new investment we made just today is it should be immediately accretive to Blue Star in the sense that it will be immediately marked to market. What should be a lift over our private placement price.
Yeah. What would be quite good, Derek, is if you could give us some more information in that investment today, and we can push that out on our Twitter page, because the investors are hungry to to know about this particular company. So
yeah, you know, what I can do is I can feed that to you offline. I'm happy to do that for sure.
Yeah, perfect. Mark, have you got anything to add?
I think it's fascinating. I mean, I really like doing this podcast because we get all these interesting people on with different business ideas. And I admit I've no idea about the esports world. Kenny, you know, obviously know a bit more than me, but from what I've heard there, I think that could be absolutely massive in the future. It could be the biggest spectator sport in the world, you know. And I think what a great time to be getting involved with that, as you know, as the internet is internet speeds are advancing, and you get seeing these gamers doing all these different things. I think it's a really great time. I wondered, I did have a question. With your investments, Derek, are they private companies or are they public companies or a bit of both?
So they are all private companies.
They're all private. Okay. Yeah.
Obviously, one of the exit strategies would be for them to go public, which is the case of the investment we made that we invested in today with the mobile gaming company. It is going public and is about to be listed.
Right. Yeah. Because that was going to be my next question: is what's the plan to monetize it? So that's one exit strategy: is that they go public.
It is.
Okay. Yeah. And how do you seek and find these opportunities, or do they sort of come to you? How do you sort of find them and then make an investment decision to support them?
I think that's part of our secret sauce, right? Is we have this unique pipeline.
Sure.
of these esports opportunities and the personalities that are involved in esports that are engaging with us on a daily basis. And it's through that engagement that we are able to come across these opportunities.
Cool. That's great. I think it's great. And I think that's a good pitch for the company. I mean, we normally do the director pitch, but I think you've sort of you've pretty much covered that in what we've talked about. I think it's people want exposure to Blue Star. To the esports sector. Then why not look at Blue Star? Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think that's absolutely right. Right. I mean, because it does give the investor a portfolio approach where we've covered off so many different bases. In the opportunities in the sector. And I think Mark, if we have a moment to go back to your comment about a growing audience, I'll share some stats with you on the esports audience. So in 2012, the estimated esports audience was 134 million folks. In 2018, it was almost 400 million folks. Okay. And they're estimating, this estimate admittedly was prepared prior to the current environment, so I suspect this might be a little bit light, but the latest numbers we had for an estimated 2022 audience was almost 650 million people.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
So, I mean that is a doubling every 4 years.
Yeah.
And revenues likewise, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
So So revenues again, same time periods: 2012, $130 million in revenue, 2018, $900 million in revenues, and projected 2022, almost $2 billion in revenues.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a great space to be in.
I think so.
Just something left field that just popped into my head, Derek. So VR and esports, is there anything out there that combines the two of them?
Interesting you asked that, Kenny. So, I mean, I think absolutely, because remember, esports is a generic name for playing a game that's going to be an electronic game and competing with people while you play that game. So there's all sorts of opportunities for there to be VR games that would be a platform or a game that folks play with against one another. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, it just popped into my head because obviously, there's plenty of VR companies out there. I'd just never seen any companies that had done this. But I think we've had a good chat. I think that's about approaching half an hour, which is probably the optimum time for a podcast. So unless there's anything else, Mark, are you?
No, I don't think so. I think that's covered everything. I've been listening quite intently and have thoroughly enjoyed that conversation there. It's been very interesting. It's certainly something I'm going to be looking into.
Yep.
I would encourage all you and all of your listeners to look into it.
Yeah. We'll look into it, Derek, if you join Twitter and Facebook. How's that? How's that for a deal? Right.
Okay.
Cool.
Great. Okay. Well, yeah. Thank you very much for your time, Derek, today. And what is it? The afternoon over for you? Is it the minute?
Just started the afternoon. We're 8 hours behind.
Hours behind. Okay. What's the weather like over there? Is it all right?
Beautiful and sunny. A little bit chilly, but beautiful and sunny.
Good. 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 Yeah. I love Canada. I've been there a couple of times. It's a nice place.
Thanks. I love the UK as well. So, I mean, two great places, right?
Yeah, sure. Great. Okay. Well, thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yep. Thanks. Thanks, Derek. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
Kenny.
Cheers. Bye. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Next time on the podcast, we welcome our first private investor, a businessman, entrepreneur, and a private investor. So tune in next time if you can.